going. Yay! Okay.
And that will be our intro.
Yes. It is that now, isn't it? All right. So with that, we'll jump into some logistics with Jose and look forward.
Okay. Good evening. We have, let's see. So the last, I sent out emails about
introduction.
All right. Jose Alvarez of Clark County Community Planning.
John Spencer representing the Parks Board and acting as chair.
Lloyd Lighten, Great Rail Dependent Committee.
Ann Lawrence with the Clark Cowlitz Farm Bureau.
Eric Temple with the Railroad.
John Schaefer with the Railroad Advisory Board.
Dick Claremont, Railroad Advisory Board.
Daniel Weaver, Railroad Advisory Board.
Brittany Bajent representing the Columbia River Economic Development Council.
Okay.
Correction, I am with the Railroad Advisory Board. I forgot where I'm at.
You need both.
You were both.
Pardon?
You were both.
No. Okay.
So, at the end of last meeting, I decided we needed potentially to have two additional meetings, so we've booked June 6th and June 20th. June 6th will be at the County Public Service Center, same time at 6 p.m., and then June 20th, if necessary, would be back here. We have a work session scheduled with the County Council on June 13th. It's a Wednesday at 11 a.m. at the Public Service Center. That's on the 6th floor training room.
What day is that, 6:13?
6:13.
At what time?
11 a.m. The purpose of the work session is to give the council an update. Just going to give them what we have accomplished so far. I think I need to get the information to them maybe by the middle of next week. So I'm going to let them know what we come out of this meeting with, and then maybe update that information from whatever happens on June 6th.
Did you say with the June 6th meeting, where in the county building?
It's going to be at the Public Service Center, the training room on the 6th.
And with the folks here, are you all able to make the 6th and the 20th the key ones?
I can't make the 20th.
Not make the 20th, but the 6th.
Out of town.
Oh, that's not too bad. Maybe we can finish up on 6th. That would be nice.
That'd be nice.
Okay, so I just wanted to, we have a couple folks from our community development department, and they're the folks that review all of the land use proposals. So they're very familiar with the code. And the development standards. So if we have any questions, Vicki Kirscher and Susan Ellinger are here. They're in the back. So as we get into this, if we have any questions, they're here as a reference for us. Thank you for coming. In your binder, just going through the materials that, the second item in here are the meeting notes. Maybe we can review those. Get a grid on that. John.
Of course. On page 3, where we talked about mining, and it says the group discussed how use of the property would likely use one overlay or another. Either the property would be mined or it would be developed for freight rail dependent uses. And that's not really what we talked about. If they go in for an application for a freight rail dependent use, they'll go under this overlay. If they go in for a permit for a surface mining overlay, they'll go under the Surface Mining Act. But there's a very good chance that after they're done surface mining, they could come in for an application under the freight mining.
Yes.
And this says that the property would be mined or it would be developed for freight rail dependent uses, and maybe both.
Right. And I think that, assuming that there was nothing on the land currently, you have the option right now of one or the other. If it doesn't preclude you from mining it.
But that's what it sounded like we were talking about.
Oh, it just says likely. Likely use one overlay or the other. It doesn't say that would be...
Well, so one overlay or the other, and then either the property would be mined or it would be developed for freight rail dependent uses.
We can just add a note at the end saying it is possible that one would they be used subsequently to each other. Is everybody's okay with that?
Yeah, because if there's confusion in the future, and somebody going back to our notes and saying, oh yeah, they wanted it.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Any others? All right, somebody want to... Are we moving to pass these things?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Anybody want to make a motion?
Also move.
Second.
Moved and approved to approve the minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions, I think that was unanimous. Moving on with Binder.
So, next is the color-coded list. There's two lists. One is 10 pages, the other is 6. The 10 pages just has the entire section that we were working off of. The 6 pages, just editing, taking out those uses that we determined that were not met, that didn't meet the definition of freight rail dependent use. So I was thinking maybe we could start with that 6-page sheet in going through this one more time. And so, and just the rest of the materials after that page, we gave you a 1-page sheet that's starts with permitted uses. It gives you some examples of conditional uses and footnote, and I have something related to the footnote we can discuss a little later that might be a better alternative to using the footnote for tying the uses to the definition for freight rail dependent use. So the next section is it's page 1 of 6, and it's the forest so resource section of code, and this is just highlighting the ag and forest and the conditional uses that are in that zone currently. And then the next 1 of 5 sheet is the rural district, and that's 5 sheets, and it's also essentially doing the same thing, highlighting what the conditional uses are in that code section. And then the blue sheet next to that is the development standards that I think I provided to you last time we met, which I had an edited version, and this is just the clean version, taking out some of the redundancies, keeping in the standards from the Rural Industrial Land Bank related to landscaping, and then the language that's underlined is new language that deals with sort of the preservation of agriculture and how to address those things. And I think there's under C. The next item is in gray, and I think this is the comment that was submitted by Eric for his version of essentially the code section as he sees it with the development standards, not including the use table. The next sheet is in sort of this yellowish, near yellow. And it's just kind of a checklist to follow. These are the outstanding items that we still need to complete. And just so you can get a visual of what those things are, and we can go through those, and as we're going through those, keep a tally and try to keep us focused. And then after that are the public comments that have been submitted since the last meeting, including a couple that sent out via email today and some yesterday. Are there any questions?
Okay, here are no questions, but I see you're all still trying to catch up a little bit. I suggest we follow Jose's suggestion and get to the draft rate rail dependent uses, which was the second or third section back. It's the 106. It's the short version of the use table we worked on last time. Easy way to identify it is 4/5 of the way down. There's a purple line covering the sewer treatment facilities that step one is to make sure we addressed.
Okay, so the...
Are we going to remove the surface mining one? Are we going to remove the mining section?
Where are you looking?
I'm on the wrong one.
No. Six.
Six, never mind.
That one's excluded in the other.
And I'll just jump in while you're looking for it. The way staff colored this is there's some gray highlighted stuff that they just wanted to make some comments on. There's two or three lines that are purple that staff felt it would be worth our while revisiting and making sure we're all clear on where we want to go with it. And once we've dealt with that, we can have the discussion on conditional versus outright permitted and the footnote issue.
We have some pink or orange or whatever that color that also is in there.
And the pink stuff is just noting that which is specifically excluded, and I think they left it in just as a note that this is something we talked about and did specifically excluded.
Okay.
But we're not leaving other things in that we specifically excluded? Because that's inconsistent, is it not?
I think the idea was that these are the, I don't know if we wanted to, I don't think we wanted to revisit them and just point out because they're part of a bigger subsection.
Yeah, before the parts that are fully removed are full categories. These are line items within categories.
Within that.
So are we all on the same page?
Okay.
Tell them what you told me about sewer treatment. I think that it answered it really quickly for me. Let's see if it works for everybody else.
Okay, so under the category of utilities, can you bring that up, John? Oh, I'm not in that detail, I'm sorry. So, utilities here, we just wanted to get a clarification that this is, what's in the NAICS is the industry of utilities, and in our section of code under A, essentially the erection, construction, reconstruction, alteration, maintenance of underground or above ground transmission and distribution systems, poles, towers, wires, mains, drains, sewers, in-ground sewage, pumping facilities, pipes, conduits, cables, antennas, fire alarm boxes, call boxes, traffic signals, which don't require above ground enclosed buildings, are permitted in any zoning district. So they're already allowed. So that's, we just wanted to call that to your attention in relation to this. With the utilities in here are more about the the industry of utilities, but not the provision the way it's laid out here, in case that wasn't, if that had any impact on how you were evaluating that.
So the way you said it to me earlier, which I think was much more succinct, was this line is about actually putting in a sewer treatment plant. It doesn't reflect on whether or not you can actually bring sewer utilities to the site.
Well, so that would include pipes and tanks and things like that that you would use to construct a sewer facility?
It also says a septic system is an on-site sewage system.
It's covered by that.
So the question is, do we really want to allow a sewer treatment plant, or did we really just want to intend that sewer?
Well, would this be in support? That's what I'm asking, though. Is this in support of sewage treatment plants?
Yes, this is support sewage treatment plants.
So it would include pipes and things, so you could store them there and hand them, bring them in by rail and take them out by rail.
Oh, I see where you're going.
I'm talking about the parts for sewage treatment plant that you're going to construct elsewhere.
I think the parts would actually fit under a storage yard category.
Warehousing, storage. You could store that, and that would be already covered
elsewhere.
In the other section.
Okay.
Right. So, I mean, this is just if you were going to create another treatment plant like Vancouver has or
so the wastewater. So I'm going to move that we remove that.
I disagree completely. And here's the reason. You can end up with huge septic systems on the ground.
And this isn't about the treatment on site. This has nothing to do with treatment on site.
Can you have a sewer system that's just for the company on site?
Yes.
The difference between the two is the sewers, but I think a sewage treatment plant treats the sewage and discharges clean water into the ground. Or a septic tank, you put the waste into the ground and...
Right, and I think what this is talking about is a plant. Like, the city of Vancouver collects all the waste through the pipes. Clark Regional Wastewater District has the facility out north of Salmon Creek. Those are the two treatment plants that are in the county that I'm aware of. So that's what this is referencing.
Are the Indians considered a plant?
What?
The Cowlitz injection.
Cowlitz tribe.
Oh, no.
So you're saying this A would include an injection system that the Cowlitz tribe has, or would include a major facility to treat the sewage
We have a water and sewer requirement, and so they would have to on-site sewage treatment. And this doesn't get to that. This wouldn't.
So even if we take this off, they're still able to do that.
Cool.
All right, so do we have a consensus then to go ahead and remove this?
Yep.
Cool. All right, let's hit the next one, which is another couple pages back on real retail sales.
So the retail bakeries as a part of the food manufacturing, we had a conversation that we wanted to include that. And that's, I think, where we had the conversation about the footnote and whether it was tied to that. If that's what you want to do, again, it's just kind of going back to the fabrication process and storing and transporting, and already eliminated the retail uses from the rest of the code. So do you want
I've had some thoughts since then, and I think right along the rail, it's probably not necessary to have retail bakeries and things like that fabricated on site, because how would you get folks in and out of there without it?
Well, it gets back to the size of the project.
True.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's going to be on a road. The plants in the back and the retail outlet.
Yeah, I'm open to suggestions.
That prevent somebody from having an outlet? Like if you had a Reese's or somebody that holds stuff in and out, and have an outlet there that you could sell your stuff retail? I mean, the major plant is distributing this food product by trucks all over the place, and would that prevent them from having a retail corner of that shop?
You know, most of these big guys, they're just producing for the big wholesalers, and if an individual wants to buy something, you're out of luck. Where you can't buy direct like a wholesaler can, where if we allow this, they can set up a little deal where, you know, backyard guy can come in and buy something.
Right, and then and the only pushback I'm going to give you is that, again, this is for, you're not contemplating retail as part of this. I understand it makes sense to have this integrated in certain areas, and it's existing and it works, but this is a specific area where the focus has been on these fabrication, processing, storing,
and doesn't say it can only be the stuff that's fabricated on site. And that was the footnote says.
Well, I have a thought.
That's not.
Which is rare. No. What if that line item was subject to conditional use permit, and so it was on a case-by-case basis? Would that be too gray of an area for us to leave?
What the conditional permit's for.
Right, but I mean, could we just...
What would be the condition?
I don't know what I don't know.
As I recall, in the railroad overlay when we did that, was that we restricted to, I don't know, 5 or 10% of the total space.
Right, and that's because in our industrial code, we have an allowance, 10%, up to 10% of the site you can have commercial on it. This isn't that. This freight rail dependent overlay that doesn't really contemplate retail. That's the difference. And it seems like there's this retail bakery component. I think there's another section that talks about the sales of manufactured of products that are manufactured on site. So there's really I don't think it's a big number of users.
Well, isn't the whole purpose of that to reduce the impacts off-site? You know, to keep the people on-site so you don't have 300 people going out for lunch and hitting 117th at noon? And
there's nothing that prevents...
Oh, I don't think we're talking about that.
That's a different... Yeah.
No, that's exactly why that's there, isn't it?
We did discuss that as part of our conversation.
Right.
Yes.
He's talking about the land bank. In the land bank, there's a provision for...
I'm not talking about the land bank. I'm talking about the railroad overlay that we did years ago.
What John was talking about, I think, was the land bank language that allows some manufacturer to have in their facility somewhere a place for their employees to buy food, a coffee shop, whatever, but it's not open to the public.
Right.
That's the key point. And I don't think it's... There's going to be enough demand for retail. I don't think it's a fight worth having, personally. It's not manufacturing. It's not fabrication. It's none of those things. It'd be nice for whoever owns it, perhaps, to allow people to come in and buy stuff, but I don't think it's encapsulated in 5517.
I can visualize a bakery where we ship products in by rail and ship bread out by rail, and they also have a retail outlet to there where they sell their product right on their client.
And we already did specifically allow that case. Okay. That is...
Is that in here somewhere?
That's what we're talking about. That's 311811 retail bakeries.
And that's what we're talking about.
So manufacturer of granite countertops, they ship their stuff in, they maybe do a little fabrication. Would someone maybe want to come and pick up a countertop? I think there's one downtown Vancouver that's right on the rail. Mm-hmm. Would that preclude this if we X this off?
So I think if you're going to advertise and have people coming to your site, you're going to, when we do the development review, you're going to tell us that you're going to have this retail component. Mm-hmm. So when we review your site plan, we're going to have to figure out how much square footage is going to be devoted to that. With that, we're going to try to determine how much parking you're going to need for the general public that's outside of the parking for your employees. Mm-hmm. It's just an additional impact. And the legislation is really focused on non-retail uses, and so that's why.
So if we crossed off this purple line, retail sales of products fabricated on site. Would that preclude the possibility of anyone ever doing that with their granite shop or their bakery, or is it a conditional use for each person and that's a possibility?
I think if we took that off, it wouldn't be a possibility.
Okay.
Your example, by the way, is building materials.
So, let me ask a question on this. This footnote one is the, we talked about 10.4, it says the uses are intended to serve and support the needs of employees, clients, customers, and vendors. And with the to further public objectives such as curb reduction.
And this is the footnote for our industrial code, which is totally different.
This is what was used when they did the overlay for the railroad.
I understand.
Okay.
It's in our industrial code section, and that, and it's different than this because the underlying zoning here, remember, is rural and agriculture, and so.
But how far does that stretch?
How far does it stretch?
Well, I mean, if you're selling things that were brought in by rail, is that railroad dependent?
If you're
selling things that were, the only thing you're talking, the only difference is one is wholesale and one is retail. So why would one be covered and one not?
If they come up with a different example, because we already have allowed in here building materials and industrial equipment sales that might come in by rail. If somebody in the future comes in, Jose, and has a different product than these two that makes sense to be rail dependent, couldn't they come in and get this changed? This document can be changed without changing the comp plan.
It
could be changed.
Yes.
So if somebody comes in, they can just apply.
That's not what I'm saying. We're saying Joe Blow comes in and he's going to make widgets. And the way we're doing this now, if he makes the widgets and they're rail dependent and he sells them wholesale, we're going to say yes. But if he wants to take the same widgets and sell them retail from the same site, we're going to say no.
Because the presumption is that the retail impact is going to be greater. Mm-hmm. You're going to have more people coming to your site. More than likely, you're going to have...
What does that have to do with the airport freight dependent use?
Well, it's the wholesale is closer to what the bill was intending than retail. That's the only difference.
I mean, I think hers is a good example where those big slabs of granite would be brought in by rail, and people go in and pick those out all the time and order them in their contract.
But that one's covered in the two green lines below it. It's building materials right below there. So it's already allowed. It's green.
So are you all interested in Anne's suggestion of a conditional use on this one?
I would suggest a conditional use based on a percentage of activity.
Well, we wouldn't get to say what the conditions are. We just say that it's... I think it might be time to...
Well, at this point, we're just going through to make sure that they're still... They either meet the definition or not of freight rail dependent. The conditional discussion will come later. So if you want to keep it, we'll just keep it and move on. And then we'll have that discussion about conditional.
Okay.
It leaves it pretty wide open, but in the interest of moving on, we probably should. I don't think that the bill was intended to make, like you said, to make a retail establishment along the rail line. I don't think that's what it's for. And I think that if this is changeable and an individual had a request like that, they could submit it for a site review and possibly get what they need out of that. But the building materials and construction supplies are already allowed.
And if it's adequate volume, they could establish their own retail outlet someplace.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be in there.
No.
Or they could apply to the county council and try to, or the planning commission, and try to get this table changed.
Sure.
As
yeah,
well.
Sure. Absolutely.
If it makes sense, they would change it.
There are options.
So do I hear the group shifting to disallowing it then?
I would drift in that direction. Conditional at the best, yeah. Yeah, but
yeah, I'd leave it off.
I've got how about Dan and Brittany?
That's fine.
Okay. All right, so it's off then. That was a good discussion. All right.
anything else on this? Actually, in the footnote issue, should we hit that?
Well, so I wanted to, page four, transportation and warehousing. The pipeline transportation, scenic and sightseeing transportation. I mean, is that still? I think that's
actually building a building a pipeline on it. That's kind of hard. It'd be hard to do to build a pipeline across an area and then do rail transport for the rest.
So I think it is the transporting of the materials.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
And so is it freight rail dependent, is the question.
Pipeline transportation, is that the one you're looking at? 486? I mean, that's back to the issue, I guess. If storage of pipes and all the supplies and everything in the pipeline transmission, I mean, why do we have a duplicate here?
Right. Again, we do specifically allow storage elsewhere. This is the actual.
But I'm concerned that there's something underlying there that we're eliminating if we take it out. Do you have a definition someplace of what this means?
Pipelines are allowed underground.
Utilities.
In that one
utility
section.
Right.
So it's
utility pipeline as opposed to.
So anything underground or anything in support of the development would be included in your other
utilities
section. Can't get too excited about it then.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we're following Steph's urging and.
So what are we doing? Eliminating it?
That one, axing pipeline transport, if I've got the sense of the group.
I'm fine with that.
All right, and then scenic and sightseeing transportation. Personally, I'm not sure why that's even on there. So ax the scenic stuff too. Okay. And then it looks like there's one more.
4889.
Other support activities for transportation. I think it's for the pipeline. It's all of the other support activities that aren't just above it.
Oh.
Because those already cover what you permitted, so I don't think that's necessary.
So cross off 4889. Yeah. Makes sense.
Well, it's just a thought here. I mean, we don't know what might come in the future on that. Other support activities for transportation, it might include something freight rail
that
qualifies. I don't know what it means necessarily, but but
be careful. In other words,
in the development standards.
It's about in the middle of the page.
484, 484, 485, 487. Fattening of livestock.
No, that's not. Does not look freight rail dependent. What's left after that?
Yeah.
That's
where you were going.
Yeah.
Okay. So has that come out?
So that just came out. And anything else before we
So the other services, except public administration. We eliminated the automotive repair and maintenance, the commercial industrial machinery and equipment. I understand how maybe some of that equipment might come on freight, but the repair of it, I'm sort of having a hard time seeing that. If you've got some equipment on site somewhere, how's it going to be repaired using freight?
To bring
Bonneville Power ships massive transformers on this line to Milepost 2, okay. And so they bring in the transformers, they service them, and then they take them out by rail. So there's an example.
Those are full of oil too, aren't they?
At some point, yeah, they get.
It's not crude oil.
Mineral oil.
TCBs.
So they're. It's once again in the next step, they have to provide a rail use plan, I believe, as part of it. So if they don't qualify there, then it's a moot point again.
Okay. All right. And then under accessory uses, we talked about, I think we had eliminated some of the administrative things that were in here previously, and so
under accessory uses. On line C, off-site hazardous waste treatment and storage facilities? I don't think so.
You don't want any spent nuclear rods laying around there?
No, sir.
Well, I think that, that's where these footnotes come in, because the overlay, it limits it just to permitted only in association with the permitted use. So if you have some stuff that needs to be taken to a hazardous waste landfill and it needs some pre-treatment before you ship it, you should do that on site.
But that would be on site, right?
On the site it was before it went up to the rail line.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that would be off site.
All right, gotcha. I'm good.
So I'm hearing X, C, but I don't hear any objections to A or B.
As long as they're in support of the underlying business, it makes sense. I mean, they might need security or what have you.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. What about those other ones that you had marked in light purple, like 425? Is that, am I looking at that right? Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
Did we deal with that one?
Which line, Daniel?
425. Okay. 425. Hey John, can you do that?
Oh.
In the ICS. That 425, in reading it, it looks like those are trades that they never take possession of, the way I was reading this, and I just wanted to point it out to you.
Okay, that sort of sounds like the stock market or something.
It's 406.
Like commodities markets in Chicago.
Of that same thing we're looking at.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, the multi title of the goods being sold around the CM. So
I'm hearing a general agreement that, yeah, that's not really what we intended.
Correct.
Good catch. Yeah. And retail big news to our revisit that. Are we good with that? It's a separate issue. Well, that's where we're going to the top part. Yeah, so let's go to
So putting that wholesale bakery aside for a moment, we had had the discussion last time about whether we needed a footnote that said, you know, all these permitted items actually have to be freight rail dependent. And Jose had a, what I was thinking was a pretty good answer to that.
So if you turn two, three pages to the, this is just for an example, I just want to show you what I'm thinking instead of using, so where the forest and ag page, I guess, yes. The other
direction,
two pages.
Where are you?
Is it one of six?
Go two pages deeper than the second one.
No.
Okay.
Further back.
Other way, Dave.
One more?
Got it. Other direction, Dave.
So it says page 1 of 6?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two more pages.
Past the charts. All the way past the charts.
That way.
Too far.
One page back.
One of six.
Three or five. Okay. Get me where I'm supposed to be.
That's all right.
Thank you, sir.
So, under B, uses, when we create the overlay code, we're sort of going to follow a similar model. So, what I was thinking is, where it says uses, the uses set out in the table below are examples of the uses allowed. In this, in ours, it'll say the freight rail dependent use overlay. I'm thinking in here, we can add a sentence that says that the uses in the table should be consistent with the definition of freight rail dependent use overlay.
Must.
It's a shall. Shall.
Okay.
So the uses in the table shall be consistent with the definition of freight rail dependent use. And we're going to put those definitions that you agree to, freight rail dependent on, there was two others, in this section of code, in the definition section, so that when you're looking at the table, you don't have to reference the footnote, that it's there, that all of these things need to be consistent with those definitions. And I think that should address some of the concerns that have been raised about.
We still have like some of these accessory uses that we need another footnote for them.
Well, we've already, we just included that section of the accessory uses.
Well, we say administrative, educational, okay, other related activities are permitted.
John, let me stop you there for a moment. Let's focus on first on the question of whether, as a broad issue, putting his sentence in there says.
So could you explain that again?
So after the first, in uses, after the first sentence, what my proposal was to, the uses in the table shall be consistent with the definitions of freight rail dependent use below. So the definition includes the transportation, processing, storing, and fabricating. And so instead of having a footnote that says it has to meet that freight rail dependent use, we put it up front when you're looking at the use
table. It should be there. I agree.
Yeah. That way.
So this use table will only apply to the freight rail column.
Right. Well, that's all there's going to be in our table, ultimately. We're going to get rid of all the other sections.
That makes sense,
and I think that's where people look for those things.
Right.
Are there other examples of where that's been done, some kind of an umbrella type use or description in the code?
For this is the one.
Would this be a unique case? Okay.
Yeah. But it seems like it would make the most sense having to refer to a footnote. It's like, okay, this is what the table is intended to do, and it corresponds to the definition that we agreed to, and I think that would address some of the concerns.
This gets back to the question I raised last time, and that was, in order to get into that column to begin with, don't you have to be a freight rail dependent use? I mean, before you even start on that table, don't you have to be defined as being freight rail dependent?
I think
so you're now saying that
this just reiterates that.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Yeah.
It's circular, but it's making that second circle.
Okay.
You never worked for the county, have you?
Yeah. As a reminder.
Belt and suspenders.
Just one. Why not put that under there? Assuming that we were going to do a rail use plan, which was always sort of the model that was incorporated into railroad industrial, why wouldn't you just put it in there? That language that you know when you put your rail use plan in, you've got to demonstrate that you're part of the law.
You could do it there too.
It seems like a good fit in that section.
But I think because of the conversation we're having about the uses in the footnote, I just thought it'd make more sense to put it up front than
I'd say for as somebody who fairly regularly references use tables like this.
Put it everywhere.
The first place I go if I'm looking at a property and thinking about what can we do with it is to the use table. Development standards is after the fact, if you will. So answering that question up front, for me anyway, would be really useful. Yeah.
It's a good idea.
I think we've got a general consensus.
Cool.
All right, now John wanted.
Okay. We have a lot of things that we said yes to that the industrial rail had conditions on. Just like repair and maintenance, we have a yes. And the industrial groups, they had a three, and three is pretty. It restricts to what you can do on that site. We have the P2, which is on the accessory uses, that says that it has to be permitted only associated with permitted use. Do we need to have something like that?
Do you mean retain the footnotes in addition to the
The general footnote says, the permitted uses have to be railroad dependent, freight rail dependent. Well, administrative is not freight rail dependent. No way, no how, not going to happen. But it is allowed under the rail overlay, the current one, or the zoning, whatever it was called, if it's associated with a permitted use. So it makes a distinction where we don't.
Right, and I think that the distinction that it's making is in our case because of the overlay. We want to have, I don't think anything precludes you from having those accessory uses that are sort of inherent to the industrial component of it. So if you had a factory and you had office space for workers, I don't think, we're not looking at these accessories as it having to be an accessory to allow that. When the site plan comes in, we're not going to look at it as like, this is an integral part of the business, and you're going to have you can have that component. I don't think you need to have that accessory as part of it, but if you think it's necessary to ensure that that isn't lost, we can make that.
Because what gives me is when you go through site plan, what exactly you got to do, and they go through the list, make sure you're covered in. We've just said footnote or whatever it is, that each one of these uses has to be rail dependent. Well, we got a couple of them that are here that cannot be rail dependent.
But they have to be in association with something, right?
Right. And all I'm saying is that the previous people made that distinction, and we haven't. So is that going to be a problem down the road?
So why don't we go through and determine the permitted and conditional, And then when those come up that have the footnotes, we can look at it and see if we need to include it or not.
Okay. Because there's not a lot of
them. I know. Glancing at it, yeah.
And you also had a question about removing the ag section.
Oh. Yeah. So on that same, on the first page of the 1 of 6, I think it's just highlighted in yellow. Can you pull up the ag definition in code? I think, yeah, we looked at this already in terms of the slaughtering. And so these are, this is the ag that's allowed in every zone. So the question is whether we need to, it's already allowed in the underlying zone for R5, R10, R20, and the ag and forest. So whether you want to keep it in here at all.
I'd be in favor of taking it out, just to make the list small as possible.
That was my thinking on that.
If it's already permitted, there's no point in specifying it, but we've specified a lot of other things here.
I don't think we've specified anything that's already.
Does it have an impact as to whether it's something that's freight rail dependent?
No, ag's already allowed.
Well, I understand that. It's already allowed, but does the freight rail make it a different color of sorts?
So, like, as an ag industry, shipping on the rail commodities, which we already do.
Right.
And that would be a permitted ag?
Yes, also. They can already do it.
I mean, I'm in agreement. If it doesn't preclude us from doing something else freight rail dependent, then I'm saying, why do we need?
So it's a sense, go ahead and take that section out since it's covered elsewhere.
Hi, my name is Susan Ellinger. I'm with the Community Development. I guess I'm a little bit concerned about the difference between what is allowed in the underlying zone, and I apologize, I haven't been at any other meetings, so you may have already talked about this. Are all the uses allowed in the underlying zone? Do those continue to be allowed, or only the uses listed here? And
if the uses in the overlay would only apply if you're using the rail, you have to use the rail. So R5, if you wanted to do whatever's allowed there, you'd be continued to do that. It's the overlay would only apply to those areas, and these things would only apply if you brought in the development to use that.
But what if you're doing agriculture and the overlay, now you've taken this agriculture stuff out of the overlay, does that mean you can't do that anymore?
No.
Because there are going to be things under that overlay so that would not be consistent with the overlay.
So if there's a conflict, is that what you're trying to get at?
Well, yeah, I mean, can you put a new single-family home on a parcel? Can you do any of the other uses that are allowed in those zones already if you have the overlay on them? And then if you do, you know, those, if you do utilize the overlay to do whatever use, can you also do the uses that are allowed in the zone? Can you, I saw the one, not maintenance, but caretaker under accessory, but within the commercial and industrial, sometimes people have a single family house and they have some sort of commercial or industrial. And so I just want to be really clear about where we're going with that so we can implement it.
So if we developed an example would be if we developed a warehouse there and you had a warehouse that was shipping things in and out, you could still build a house on the side of it?
So I guess the way I'm thinking of it is if you have the ag rural use currently and you don't avail yourself to the uses allowed in the overlay, then you can continue doing those uses. Once you sort of trip the freight rail dependent use overlay, that's what you're going to be dealing with. And so if there are uses that you still want to do that are allowed in the underlying zone.
Here's a thought.
Either, yeah.
If you have land there now and it's zoned ag, but you're not doing ag now, and you want to do ag later, I would not want to harm that landowner's ability to use that land in that way. So I see no harm in just leaving that section in and moving on.
And isn't there language about pre-existing uses prior to the overlay? So it's they're pre-existing.
Except that can change. Right. Where we live has been rezoned like 4 times since we moved in, and none of it was our choice. So it can change. So I think we protect ag and just leave it in.
Yeah. I mean, I would get it like the surface mining overlay. You know, we're mining over here, and on the other half, they're still farming. You know, it's not a problem.
So is that where we're headed? Not around the table to just leave it? Conditional versus permitted.
Yes.
Okay, where are we now?
Does that satisfy your concerns? I guess that's...
Sue, right?
Susan.
Susan? Yeah, right. Be good to be near the speaker. It's not a speaker, it's a receiver. It's a mic. At our last session, we briefly discussed whether we should be talking conditional versus permitted, and it got very fuzzy very quickly. So we just said, okay, all these things are the things we're going to allow one way or the other. And we said we'd come back today to decide whether any specifics needed to be a conditional use, meaning that we're not outright permitting it, but allowing the opportunity in a conditional use. And you are going to help us understand what the heck that means.
Okay. Well, generally, the way that we implement conditional uses and the things that you would see in a use table are the uses that have some additional impacts compared to the uses that are outright permitted, and the conditions help mitigate those additional impacts. So maybe a specific use needs additional setbacks, or it has noise impacts, or something like that, and we would consider conditions to deal with those additional impacts. It's really a very similar review process. It's just a way of trying to take care of and buffer and mitigate those impacts.
And from an operational perspective, if it's conditional, the staff comes up with the conditions, the impact mitigations, and then allows it, and the applicant just needs to follow those mitigations, generally speaking.
The applicant will propose something. Frequently, they will propose mitigation to deal with whatever those impacts may be. But during the review process, we would consider those and try to decide if we think that's enough, or is additional mitigation necessary. And frequently, one decision you'll need to make is if some of these conditional uses go directly to a hearings examiner, and then a hearings examiner might be considering those impacts as well. Because right now, conditional uses start out at a staff level. We have typing for type 1, 2, and then 2A is a conditional, the conditional uses started as a 2A, which means that if anybody asks for the review process to go in front of the hearings examiner. It wouldn't stay at staff level. A hearing would be required. So that would be another thing you're probably going to want to discuss.
So would you be looking at visual, as in light pollution, if you will, and sound and odor and those types of things?
Those are things that we would consider, and depending on the type of use, we may ask for special studies. We, for example, with some surface mining uses, sometimes we'll ask for special studies, especially for noise and things like that. Understand that when we do that, we may have to ask the applicant for additional information, and there's cost involved in that.
How is that different than the performance standards that you sort of have at the back of the? There's stuff about noise. There's stuff about glare, odor, vibration, electromagnetic interference. So it seems, is that different? What you're talking about, is that different if it's already in the code? Because it seems like there's already a hurdle established, and you're talking about creating a different hurdle.
I think that, I guess I would answer that, and I might be interested in what Chris has to say about that as well. But the if it's listed as conditional, I think you could potentially place additional conditions on that review, on that approval. If it's permitted, but it also has to meet those standards, as long as there's nothing that we think, or we don't have any evidence that would show that that isn't going to meet the standards, we're unlikely to put those conditions on.
So, to put a specific case may help.
Yes.
All of this. So I'm going to say, let's look at 332.813, electric plating, anodizing, and the like.
Got it.
So in that situation, that's use is going to use, in my layman's understanding, a lot of hazardous chemicals. And whereas normally our development standards don't say anything about hazardous chemicals, we put a C there, it triggers a staff review, and you guys say, whoa, wait a second, we need to make sure you've got a rubber liner under the property to make sure that it doesn't leach into the groundwater or something.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm going to go back to what I talked about the other day, and that is we've already developed this for the railroad overlay and the industrial land bank. Why are we reinventing this? Why can't we just look at the same things that we did there?
Perhaps this is a more sensitive area being located to homes, near homes. Would that be why we'd need to look at
the industrial land bank was, and so was the railroad overlay. They were all in the same area. The railroad overlay was the same area.
And just once again, out of curiosity, so the example you gave looks like metal plating, which is already covered by the performance standards that exist in Clark County Code. So that's my question, is how is this different than what, I mean, all the stuff's been done before. I mean, or a lot of it has been done before. And that's sort of what he's getting to, is that railroad industrial has been done before. All these performance standards have been done before. I don't know why we
reinventing
the wheel here.
And if you go back to the electroplating and you go across, so it's conditional in our light industrial zone.
Okay.
It's permitted outright in heavy industrial.
There you go.
That's why.
That's the explanation. Thank you.
Yeah. This is a different kind of a zone.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Sorry.
All right.
Perfect.
So can we not take those three tables and look at them and say, okay, if we're going to permit it, then if it's a heavy industrial, as opposed to go to each one and think of it separately as a virgin territory, and look at the three columns we've already done before.
And the only thing is that The railroad industrial was more of a heavy industrial.
Right.
The rural industrial land bank was more of a light industrial.
Yeah.
Right. What is this?
So we need to look at it, I think.
But I think Dan has a good idea, though. If
you
we can sort of just go right down the list and look at what's P and what's C. Well,
we've already named some of them as conditional.
Right.
We kind of already had a lot of these conversations.
Well,
and the only, and that, and I think that's a good place to start. And the only other thing is that I provided you the list of what's conditional in the R5 and the ag zones. And in those zones where this overlay is going to apply, the standards are a little different. It's not intended. These areas, notwithstanding the industrial code and the rural industrial land bank, weren't intended for this industrial intensity.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking.
The schools and churches are conditional uses in those zones.
Mm-hmm.
Factories, all of these manufacturing uses, relative to that.
All I'm saying is that if it's a P across the board right now in light industrial and rural industrial land bank and everything else, maybe we could move quickly and think about just putting a P there and then look at maybe the ones where there are conditions, just a suggestion elsewhere. Or also, once again, it might be a great time at this very moment, as I've suggested before, we should really get public comment before
I
making
totally
these decisions.
I totally agree.
Leave me hanging? Right. Oh, I can't believe you did that to me.
Oh, it was supposed to be a hand.
Yeah, that was a high five. Yes, thank you. Jeez.
After a 5 minute break.
I was here, but I'm way old.
Because this is the stuff that really matters.
Absolutely. I appreciate you bringing that back. I feel bad that I didn't go there myself. So with everybody's concurrence, let's open up for some
quick
break. So 5 minutes, we'll start up again at 7:16 on my watch.
In 20 seconds.